We'll Morris our way into the October 4, 2013 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the not-so-palatial studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, with this rain report.
I have loved Morse code from day one. To me, it's ham radio.
That's Harry Koenig, WD8Q, who feels that while Morse code is an art form in amateur radio, so is the sending of it.
I was in my late teens when I first found out it existed. It attracted me right away. I learned the code just very roughly. When I was dating the gal who is now my wife, they had an old console radio in their dining room, and I got invited there to supper several times. And after supper, the ladies would go take care of the dishes and that, and I would turn on the old radio and tune in W1AW and listen to the hisses because it had no beat oscillator. I got to Hawaii in the Air Force. They was giving code classes at the Mars station. So my wife wasn't with me right away, so I spent a lot of time at the Mars station. So that was in the early 60s, and finally, in raising a family and things settling down a bit, I got my license in August of 1980.
Let's talk about code. You know, I don't run into very many guys who love Morse code, but you do. As far as you're concerned, what is the best way to learn it?
I think it varies with different people. I believe in the learning it at a faster speed with lots of space between characters, so you're not counting dots and dashes. Hear the character like at 13 words a minute, and then space between letters so you can think a little bit. I believe that's the best way, but there's many different ways to learn it, I know.
When it comes to actually sending code, what do you use?
I'm an oddball hap. I use a Bencher paddle. Right hand configuration with my left hand, so I'm hitting the dits with my thumb instead of the dots.
Oh, wow.
The dashes, rather.
Okay. As we record this at the date and have mentioned, I've been giving a lot of thought to in and on CW on my Kenwood TS-480,
uh-huh.
A rig I've had for 4 years, and I've not had one CW contact with
it. Oh, my.
Partly because I don't even own a straight key.
Oh.
And yesterday, being the first day they have mentioned, just for grins, I went to a manufacturer of keyers and the like, and holy mackerel, the one that was explained to me was one that actually logs every contact you make, and it will keep the last 12,000 in its memory and will scan it so you can bring up whether or not I talked to you a year ago, and if so, it will send out, "Hi, Henry, all is well there in Columbus, Ohio." This is all pretty cool technology, but at $500?
Yes, yes. A brand new Bencher paddle today runs about $125. I picked mine up at the Findlay, Ohio Ham Fest in, I think it was 1981, for $25. But you can go clear up into the 500 and above on some of these paddles. And the thing you're describing had a lot of electronics to it also.
A blue box.
Right.
And running off your computer, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What makes a good set of paddles for code?
I think, again, it's with the person. A Bencher is a very simple paddle. It consists of a heavy base and a left and a right contact, of course. But the element that holds the paddles into position is just a loop spring. It goes from the paddles back to a pin and back to the front. It's a very simple paddle. It's got a nice touch to it. I know you can go way up in price from that, but I get a good feel with it, and I use it day and night in sending messages.
What is it that makes these paddles without the electronics so expensive or inexpensive?
I think it's the workmanship. Most of them are handmade on shop machinery, very tenderly put together, I might add. Some of them have ball bearings in them. Some have magnets that make the contact a little more solid. And, with each addition like that, I think the price goes up.
Are some of them made of primarily of plastic and others made of metal?
Most of them, even from the $125 Bencher on up, are made with a big, heavy, either steel or brass base and brass components. And again, the workmanship, I think, adds a lot to the cost of it.
The only cheer I ever had was back in the 70s and 80s, made by Palomar Engineers in Escondido, California, where I grew up, essentially. It was what they called an iambic cheer.
Yes.
Explain for the neophyte for code what iambic is.
I may not have an accurate description, but in my opinion, iambic is an electronic circuit that allows less movements of your fingers on the paddles. For instance, if I want to send a C, I just squeeze the paddles together, making sure I hit the da paddle first. And it'll go da 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 da, and you let off the paddle just before the last dip. And so it saves movements. And your longer characters like a Y, a Q, C, F, L, is so much easier to send with iambic than it is just by movements of your fingertips.
Or your numbers, especially.
Yes.
If you hold that paddle to one side, or keep sending da 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 da, and the other side, da 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 da.
Yes.
I found it really quite handy to have that. So many rigs today have built-in cheer.
Yes.
Is that as versatile as you need?
I think it, again, it depends on the person. If you're an avid contester, you probably would want an external keyer that's got memories and so forth. For instance, some contests you put out serial number, 1, 2, 3, and so forth. Well, some of the keyers will automatically increment each number, so they save time in that. And again, memories. If you're sending out CQ, a field day, for instance, you can build that into the memory, and it saves time.
Now, the $500 one I was looking at yesterday had, I believe, something like 22 messages you can program into it.
For most contests, you probably only need 3 or 4 of those message memories, but, you know, some people might go to the extreme with them.
You're listening to some chatter about CW keyers between Henry Koenig, WD8Q, and Rains Hapali, KC9RP, that took place in the Rain Booth at the 2013 Dayton Hamvention. We'll conclude their conversation in a moment. This is the Rain Report, available on Twitter.
You're listening to the Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Some people I've run into over the years using Morse code have such a good fist that you would swear they were using one of these electronic keyers, and yet it turns out that they aren't.
I envy people like that. They have a perfect sense of timing and a very smooth operation of the key. Since I've been into iambic keying, I've gotten slower and worse at straight key. But every now and then on the Ohio Slow Net, for instance, I'll get the straight key out and plug it in and run the net with a straight key. But yeah, perfect timing. Very few people have that ability.
Talk about straight key night.
January 1st. Basically, the idea is to get out the old straight key and dust it off and make contacts the way they did years ago. And friendly contacts, not rapid fire like in a contest, but just friendly back and forth contacts. The last straight key night I was on was about 8-9 years ago, and I worked a guy who was a novice. He had been a novice his whole radio life, and he had made like 30 or 40,000 contacts in that time on a straight key as a novice. So there's a club now, Straight Key Century Club. The whole idea is to use a straight key and make contacts with it. So again, it's going back to the beginning.
What have I read about where you send code with your foot?
A lot of clubs will have a night where they have people come up with a foot switch and send code. Some of them they call left foot contests. So you send it with your left foot, and it's all in fun. I don't think it's done in a serious manner, but just to have fun.
Isn't there an F-38 or something?
I'm familiar with the J-38, which is a standard tabletop straight key, a brass-built, old-style. They still work very good, although they need to be clamped down to the table so they won't move around on you. But a lot of people still use those keys.
There are obviously certain tricks on single sideband to work in DX stations, especially if it's a big pileup, when you should put your call in there and when you should just maybe go away and come back some other time.
Yep.
Are there certain rules like that for CW as well?
Yes. A lot of DX stations, because of everybody trying to reach them at one time, they'll work what is known as split. They do it on voice also, but they'll say listening up or up. You don't go on the DX station's frequency, but you move your dial up. I haven't done a lot of DX work, but what I did on one that I captured, I went up and I found out where the crowd was, and I went just a little higher, and then I set the station up for split operation where you're receiving on one frequency and sending on another. And I nabbed a guy, I think he was out in the middle of the Pacific at Tuvalu Island, and I did that using split, and he came right back to me, so I must have used the right process.
When it comes to CW on DX, do DX stations respond to those stations that have a better fist than others?
I would say generally not, but again, I haven't done enough DXing to really know. I made with Tuvalu. It surprised me how quick he came back to me, but I must have gotten off to the side of the crowd just enough where he heard my signal. But I think a good fist, whether you're sending traffic or in a contest or whatever, is always a plus because the other end can hear you better.
The thoughts of Henry Koenig, WD8Q, an inveterate CW operator. Henry spoke with Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, at the Rain booth at the 2013 Dayton Hamvention. Parenthetically, Jack Althaus, K6NY, the founder of Palomar Engineers, passed in September. For decades, Hap used Jack's IC keyer that had so-called one-dot memory. Jack was a good guy. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2013 Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from The Rain Report, www.therainreport.com.